Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the studio again, who's had a brand new baby, Jeff Richie Baldwin.
Bad Daddy, you're a naughty boy.
These days, fatherhood is everywhere. You can't get away from it. Not that blokes haven't tried. If you're not a father, you've got a father. You're a son of a dad or a daughter of a bloke. But either way, being a dad is no picnic. The fear, the anger, the confusion and, well, the love, of course. Oh. Derek Myers and Dan Lee, together with their special guests, are here to share the highs and lows, the joys and the agony of being a modern dad. But most of all, to let you know that you're not alone.
G'day, Derek.
G'day, Jeff.
G'day.
How are you, Cobber?
Welcome to Answer the Question, Stupid, where Dan interrogates everyone with impossible-to-answer questions.
I'll tell you what might be impossible-to-answer questions is podcast. What happened in the last year, yeah. In a year's time. Now, every time we have Jeff in, I get super excited about the next time we have him in. He's like our control experiment.
So when we last spoke to you, your wife, partner, was about to give birth to a child.
That's right.
A human baby. But how long has it been since the child has materialized in the world?
Next Monday will be 3 weeks. So it's just over 2 weeks now.
Wow.
Yeah.
You look all right.
I feel great.
But do you know what, Dan? I reckon that you do.
You better not feel too good or I'm going to get very upset.
Okay. No, but this is that. This is
he's still in the.
I may really.
In the office, he's in the magic zone.
Yeah, true.
Yeah. There's people around, fluffing around. Is there people? I wanted to ask you. Sorry, okay. We're not even let you talk because we're excited about your baby. It's nothing to do with you. But when you're in a hospital or a birthing center or whatever, then you do have this kind of well, what am I actually here for?
Mm.
Bathe it for the cameras and then. Piss off, you know, because there's like midwives and helpers and everything. Do you have that continuing thing as well? Does anyone stick around or is that first night?
So when Asha started going into labor, mm-hmm. and her water broke and, you know, I called the midwife and said, this is what's happening. Are you going to come? And she was like, do you want me to come? I was like, what? I want you to tell me when you're supposed
There's
to come.
There's this pressure to not be uncool and go early, isn't there? There's
so
a lot
then
of pressure.
We kind of had this pretty relaxed conversation while Asha was in labor. And she said, just call me back when you feel like you need me there. And so that was kind of how she was through the entire thing. Like, you know, we had her come and she checked it out and she's like, nah, she's not giving birth yet. I'm going to go home because it was like really early in the morning.
Yeah.
I had a nap.
So like, frightening.
Yeah. And then the next time she came back, it was on,
yeah.
You know, but then we had a second midwife. You have to have two midwives legally for home birth. And
the home birth, of course.
Yeah, we did it all at home. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So
cool.
I'd pushed because I set the pool up in our lounge room.
Yeah.
I pushed one of our couches kind of into the dining area and the midwives basically sat in there and
– sat in the pool?
No.
Oh, sat in the
– sat in the dining room on the couch.
Oh, the midwife
Asha was in the pool.
Okay, so just Asha in the pool and the baby.
Just Asha. I didn't get in. It was just Asha in the pool with, the baby still inside her.
Yeah.
And the midwives sat in the background and hardly even did anything.
Sort of barracked from a distance.
Push out her. No, you do better than that.
I was expecting I'm going to be in the way kind of scenario, and I was at the front of it the entire time.
Oh, wow. Amazing. They really just tried to leave you guys to do it. I mean, if you're having a natural birth, you may as well be as natural as possible.
Well, she'd already said, you know, she was there was no internal examination or anything during – you know, she wasn't into that. The most that they did was basically get a mirror and hold it underneath Asha with a torch so they could see what was going on. And then they'd give her some positive feedback and go and sit on the couch and raid our cupboard, have something to eat. And I just sat with Asha for hours and hours and hours.
Wow.
So it was
while she sat in the pool.
Yeah.
Did she get pretty wrinkly?
She did. She said her fingers did get a bit wrinkly, but that, you don't even think. No, even thinking
it's not,
about that.
It's not the priority.
It really distracts you from the pain. Oh, my wrinkly fingers.
That's it.
And then, did it all go well? Like, did
it went amazingly well.
That's amazing. Like, this is the first positive home birth story I've heard. Well, you just don't hear the positive ones very often, I suppose. It's the horror stories that do the rounds.
The way our midwife talks about it is we had a boring birth. Right. We have a boring baby. So, and boring babies are ones that you don't hear the stories about because nothing happened, you know. Yeah. It's like all the stories you hear are all the horror stories and bad stuff.
Yeah,
and
it's like going to New York, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, we went along. Had a great time. Had a bagel.
Yeah. It's like one of those
see someone
tricks.
Shitting in the subway. What?
Yeah. If you don't have a story about getting mugged somewhere, it's just kind of, we had a holiday, you know.
Yeah.
So the big question, some of the questions on my lips, which I've forgotten, were, you know, with the whole, what am I going to ask Jeff when he comes back after this experience, is what happened? Because I remember the movement, like it's kind of like the birth of my children. It was like stop motion, crazy. If you made a film of the whole thing, there was a lot of moving around.
Right.
In the shower for about an hour, like, you know, all three of us, me and the helper and her sister and everyone in the shower and then off over here and then eating an icy pole and all this sort of stuff. Like, was there any time when it was like, I'm going to just towel off and just have a little walk around for a bit?
Before Asha got in the pool, there was all that movement.
Yeah.
So, okay. So she actually found that lying on the couch, they said, you know, they kind of say, if you read all this stuff, it's like you shouldn't lie down and everything. But our midwife's like, if you're comfortable doing that, do that. This is how good she was. And so Asha was laying on the couch a bit. She had a shower, you know, not a lot of walking around the house, but there was much more movement until she got in the pool.
Yeah.
And she was really comfortable in the pool. Yeah. So kind of kept it at body temperature, which meant throwing buckets out over the lawn and topping it back up again. But she ended up in the pool for probably 10 hours or something crazy.
Yeah, that's a long time.
She got out once. This was before the midwife came, just to kind of gauge what was going on, and basically on what the midwife asked us, we wanted to kind of figure out what was happening. And then she was like, I'm getting back in the pool. And so, she was in the pool. And
I'm just thinking now that it must be having that weight off you.
Yeah, I think several factors. I think, you know, you put heat on sore things, you know, so muscle soreness and, you know, her lower back is where she felt all her pain. And so I think that really helped.
Yeah.
And then, obviously taking the weight off her feet and off every other part of her body.
And loosening up muscles that are soon to
major
movements and stuff. Yeah. Oh, that's fantastic.
And I think it probably did because, still getting the baby out was a struggle, but the aftermath was pretty good. Like Asha didn't have crazy tearing or anything like that, didn't need stitches or anything. So maybe the heat of the pool helped with all that. Like,
it all helped,
I'd like to think so because, like, it makes sense, but who knows if that was it. It may just be.
What score did you get? What weight?
Oh, three.
Let's go old fashioned.
He came out at 3.46 or 3.42.
Daddy,
kilos.
Have you got a converting
pounds? Brain? I don't know.
Seven.
So, yeah.
That's a big torque.
Healthy.
I think he was a pretty good,
healthy, but not.
And no,
doesn't
not,
make old people go, ooh. No.
And he's very, he was a long baby. So he's 57 centimeters long.
Right.
Which is, we were talking to friends and they were all around 53 with theirs.
Yeah.
So, he looks quite big when he's laid out.
Yeah.
But everything else, like, we didn't know it was a boy.
Yep.
So, turns out it was. So that was a nice surprise.
So you had a gender reveal underwater.
Yeah, I spotted it. I was when he came out. I my hands were there.
Did you have your goggles on when you snorkel?
I tell you what, I don't think I'd have wanted my head in that water. Even with goggles on. He came out and my hands were there. The midwife, he needed a little bit of assistance at the end, but nothing too crazy. And he dropped out into my hands.
To get him out?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So
to get him to breathe as well? Sometimes
no, the breathing.
Oi, come on.
He was fine with that. Like, okay, cool. But it was just, Do you want me to walk you through a bit of it? Like when it started to happen.
You're the only one with limits here, Jess.
So it was 18 hours was the entire labour. Right. And like I said, about 10 hours was spent in the pool. Most of that was me sitting with Asha and just trying to help her any way I could, which is basically words of encouragement, kisses, put her towards the end, putting a cool cloth on her head and stuff like that.
And you're in the pool?
No, I was. Not yet. So the pool's like, I think about the size of this table, so maybe.
Small, metre and a half.
Yeah, it's kind of comfortable for one. Two is probably getting a bit tight. Yeah.
So you don't get in at all?
I think you can, but I didn't.
You didn't? No.
No, I had, like, I could reach and.
Yeah.
And I sat on the side.
She might have been like, oh, fucking, can you get out? There's not enough room in here.
Exactly.
It sort of limits your probably mobility enable to maintain the temperature and all that. You know, hopping that in might as be, well. Seem like a novelty.
Yeah. Well, we had Ash's mum there as well. Yeah. I think I told you that she
was
over.
In the pool.
She flew over from Perth and was a really big help. So that was quite good. But yeah, 10 hours in the pool. Most of it was me with Asha. Her mum came and helped a little bit, and then her mum kind of stepped back and, you know, it was quite a special time. Asha was in it's a horrific amount of pain. Like I never imagined.
Yeah.
You know, I had this real moment of anxiety early on because of the sound she was making was just unsettling.
Primal.
Yeah. And, you know, I was so scared for her. But then over time, you know, you get used to it and you're like, okay, this is how it's meant to be. Yeah. But it didn't sound like a good time.
No.
So I went through all of that. And then when it got to the point where the midwives are like, we can see the head. And it got to a point where it was kind of crowning, is that what they call it? Yeah, you get the little bit that you can see through.
The pointy bit.
Yeah. At that point, I kind of was stepping back so I could look and watch what was going on and going back to Asha, and then kind of when it went to maybe, I don't know, half a saucer kind of, what's that, like an orange kind of size, I was at the back and I was like, I kind of want to really, really want to watch this. And thankfully, our main midwife, Belinda, at that point, she was up and Sam, the other midwife, was up at the back, and Belinda went and sat with Asha and basically helped Asha at that point.
Yeah.
And this is under the water.
Yeah, all this
is under the water.
All underwater. Yeah. So I was at the back with Sam watching. And
hang on, at the back. I'm just getting my head.
So Asha for most of it was just on her side in the pool. And then when it got to this point, we were like, we need to open the things up. So open your pelvis. So she ended up turning over onto her hands and knees in the pool with her knees kind of spread out a bit to help. And so we were standing behind her with the mirror and the torch watching what was going on. And Belinda had gone up to the front and was consoling her and encouraging her, which was amazing. Mm. And then, I watched as he emerged and it kind of through push and push, you know, you'd see him come and then it retracts and opens and retracts and slowly, slowly, slowly he makes his way out. And then it gets to the point where he's kind of, you can see his forehead and then the
first thing you see of your child is their forehead coming and going.
Yeah.
It's
crazy.
It's the start of my relationship in front of your head.
Yeah. But then the freakiest bit that I will never forget was when pretty much from the forehead, Asha made a big push.
Yeah.
We got her to raise a leg and he popped to
here.
So
just eyes and nose looking out.
He was, he was just kind of on his top lip. That whole section of his head was out up to his top lip. And we could see his head and then bang, his eyes opened while we're looking in the mirror.
Happy Halloween, baby.
Yeah. So his eyes opened with just this half of his head out and he's looking around and Ash's bum's right there and it's all like crazy. And both the midwife and I were like, whoa, like it's like it's happening.
Yeah.
And then he got to neck after that. And at that point, Asha was she was knackered. And had kind of didn't have much left in her, you know?
Yeah.
So it wasn't that she was giving up, but she certainly didn't have the strength she had earlier. And I think that was because she had started pushing harder than she needed to, just because she was done and she wanted it over.
Yeah.
And then, he got to the neck. And I think that point is basically there's like a, I don't know if this is exact, but it's like a 5-minute mark. Yeah, so at that point, you want him out in 5 minutes.
Yep.
because I think because of restriction on the neck.
Sure.
And the midwife had a feel to check what was going on and said part of the cord was out, and she was like, if the cord's out, that's another constriction point, because obviously the cord's feeding the baby with blood and oxygen. So that's when she got in and just got a hand around his chin and gave him a little bit of help. His shoulder came out, and at that point I reached in and he just –
once the shoulders are through, they just
out he came.
Schlup out.
It's,
it's a frighteningly fast experience.
Frighteningly
that
fast.
Last bit.
Yeah, it's
You'd be
like,
glad they're underwater with in a rubber tank.
Yeah,
because I was like, whoa, how
slide did across the floor.
Now, I mean, people talk about that this childbirth is a horrible shock for a child. Some people do, and that hence the whole rebirthing thing. Quickie was talking about that it's the first great shock of your life.
Mm.
And I can't see how it wouldn't be.
Yeah.
Except that. So anyway, he's got this very civilized, staged entry. It's like he starts in the theater, and then he walks into the foyer. The bath is the foyer.
Before
then exiting onto the street. So he has that lovely foyer experience of the water. So it's not just like bang lights.
Well, you've lived 9 months in liquid.
Yeah, exactly.
And then liquid. You know, it's not going to be as dazzling, maybe.
If I walked into a hotel and the foyer was in the state that that pool was in, I would be exiting straight away.
Yeah, the Chelsea Hotel.
So he probably came out and went, oh, that wasn't as bad as I thought it was going to be. And then, you know, then he comes out into the air. But going straight into the air, but I mean, I wonder what the difference is.
Yeah, well, they're shooting out. What happened? One. He's in your hands under the water.
Yeah, the midwife said, no, there's no rush to get him out of the water.
Yeah.
She said, but the rush will be the only thing that we want to do quickly is pass him on to Asher. So he came out and we caught him, and then pretty much straight away Asher knew what to do. She kind of stood and reached back, and we passed him to Asher, and she lifted him up and up and out of the water. And he made a sound straight away, just like a funny little coo sound.
Yeah.
And then she sat and
probably
maybe
said daddy.
It was probably like 10, 15 seconds and then a little cry. And then he almost straight away after that latched onto the boot.
It's amazing.
Oh,
isn't
wow.
It?
Yeah.
You guys are so lucky. I mean, that's so wonderful that it worked. Because, I mean, it's not as common as you'd like for it to work that smoothly. That's great.
I think that's definitely the case. Yeah. And home births, home births are 1% of births. Yeah. And then there's 1% of births that are accidental home births or in the car on the way in, and everything else happens in hospitals.
Keep the floor of the ute well vacuumed, just in case you don't make it to the hospital.
Friends of ours did that in Broome, and they were only around the corner too. And she gave birth in the
not the first child.
Yeah. No, gave
get
birth
a bit casual
in the 4-wheel drive in the car park.
Yeah,
yeah.
Next one, Jeff will be out there with the foot pump going, it's all right. Pump. Pumping the pool up. It's coming.
I remember watching this extraordinary it's a bit unfair. There's this video. We went looking for natural birth videos because everyone wants to have it as natural as they can, and then depending on how kind of brave, I suppose, they are, whether they have home birth or whatever. Because and that's your starting point, and then you just see how you go in the moment because it's a totally original experience, so you don't know, you can never know exactly how you're going to be. But we went looking for these videos, and I remember finding – I haven't been able to find it since, but there's a woman giving birth in a kind of jungle stream. And it's – have you seen it?
Yeah, Asher.
Fucking hell.
Asher was all over. There's one – a woman gave birth in the ocean recently as well. Like,
well, this one, she had all her other kids with her.
Yeah.
She just kind of – angelically squatted into the stream, and her husband's filming it, presumably. And she was like, oh, she was totally orgasmic in there. Sort of, she was just, it was like the most zen and I thought, you fucking asshole, putting that in there. Because the reality is, for most people, the clue was in the fact that there was half a dozen babies that she'd already had, you know, like that. She's an expert at that point. Very few people get, you don't get your Malcolm Gladwell 10,000 hours with childbirth, do you?
And that stream was actually an installation in the middle of a maternity office.
It was just bizarre. It was so, it wasn't without struggle, but she just handled it in this way that I thought, it's like, you know, the unfair depiction of impossible body standards on the sides of trams. Yeah. This was impossible birth standards.
Yeah.
But, of course, you want to – there is an ideal for people. You do want to be –
you can't get a successful, smooth home birth how you want it without pumping up the pool. and booking a midwife and going, well, we're going to do this.
Yeah.
Well, and also
not so far from a hospital, knowing that you're not endangering anybody.
Yeah. Midwives who are very relaxed obviously helps because, you know, you don't want them to be like the flight attendant that panics when there's turbulence.
I think that's their thing. Belinda, they're all relaxed.
Belinda's been delivering babies since the 80s kind of thing, and she was just she's still doing checkups and visiting us now, and, like, the whole our relationship with her is amazing. Like, you never thought it was going to be.
That's
like,
great.
You hope that it's good. But, yeah, she came around and we chat and hang out and, you know.
Is she strangely kind of floaty and zen and kind of ethereal?
No, she's kind of like or just very work, real and
just real,
and, yeah,
salt,
and
salt of the earth.
Yeah, she is. Yeah,
I was trying to make a connection between the death doulas and the birth doulas. You know how there's the people that go to end of life things who just kind of float through and have this, you know, because it's both ends of the book ends.
Yeah, but you
of
have
life,
to read. So. You have to read the mood of the people. Like, you've got a new every week. Mm. Your midwife has to deal with people who are having their apex experience.
Yeah, different.
And it's her weekly job.
Yeah, yeah.
So she's got to go in there, and you can't just you can't just go. Like, your job is to go, it's okay. This is fine. Everything's normal. Rah, rah, rah. But if you go casual about it, that's fucked up as well. You know what I mean? Like, you have to read the room and constantly know that this is the ultimate freaked out experience for people. Their first one.
But then, you know, thinking about when I called her and she was like, when do you want me to come? And I'm like,
please decide.
Yeah.
Well, at the
same time, I do think it was really good that she did that and didn't go, when this happens, you call me at this exact moment. You know,
right.
She's very much like, birth is such a, you can't plan what's going to happen.
Yep.
You know, it's going to happen the way it wants to happen. And we just go with that. You know?
And it may be the apex experience or the kind of this profound experience, but it also happens all the time.
Mm.
It's also a very normal sort of thing. So, but look, it's this. It's just who know anything can happen. And, you know,
my favorite midwife was the big boss lady. Like, in one of mine, I don't know which kid, but I'll never forget Matron Sloan.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, she was the
stand
she was
aside.
Just like, right, there you go. She was the one that forced me to snip the cord because I'd regret it after her. She thought I was squeamish, but I didn't. I just didn't believe in it.
Oh.
Right. I didn't think it was a good ritual to go, thank you very much, I'll take the kid. Right. I'm not going to do that. I'll let Fiona do that. That's fine. It's, you know, she carried the thing.
Let's get the little bugger out of there.
Anyway, so I really liked the bossy midwife.
Yeah.
Decisive, bossy, always bagging out doctors. Just going, oh, what do they know?
Yeah.
You know, it made me feel comfortable. How was your one?
She was great.
Yeah.
Like, I don't feel like I talked to her much through the whole experience until at the end, you know. And then, like, when Bub arrived, we wanted to leave basically the cord on until the pulse stopped and all of that. So, you know, Asha was carrying the baby when the placenta dropped and all of that stuff happened, and she lost a bit of blood through that, but nothing to worry about. It freaked me out, but it was not that the midwives were fine with it.
Are we out of the pool by now?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So she fed in the pool. I kind of supported Asha over the edge of the pool while she started the feeding thing, and then we're like, she was starting to get cold, and obviously, you know, her body's in shock, so all kinds of things. So
Bucket boys dropped the ball.
So we got her out onto the couch, you know, blood and everything everywhere, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, when she dropped the placenta, it was in the and she went into the bathroom or the toilet and dropped it in a container. I'll tell you why.
So and then, to encapsulate it.
Exactly.
Yeah, we did that too.
Yeah. Mm. So she's doing that now.
Oh, that and, stem cell thing?
Or no, it's more they dry it out and put it in capsules and
they encapsulate it and Ash is taking it. And
I was trying to get her to fucking eat it there and then.
Yeah, they do. People do tablets. Do that. Oh, wow. Stir fry. Yeah, tablets.
Oh.
And there's theories on all sorts of stuff to do with, you know, replenishing your body and also preventative on postnatal depression and things like that, supposedly. Yeah.
There's magic stuff in there.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if it's placebo, it doesn't matter if it works. I mean, I feel like Missy did that with one and she felt good.
Yeah.
But you'll never have – you can never really know what it would have been like otherwise, but it certainly doesn't hurt. They do
it. Well, most animals do it, you know. Like, and there's a reason, I think, why they do it.
That's a good tucker for them.
Yeah, it could be their next meal.
Some of them eat half the babies too.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, this is too many. For fuck's sake. Barry, come and have a few of these.
Would you know, I was a home birth. We
an accidental home birth?
No. It's just like a...
It's just the way they did it in old school Scotland.
No, my older brother was at a hospital, but I was a home birth job. It became a fashion around 66, maybe.
Wow.
In Scotland. But
grab that one, will you?
But there was no mystique about afterbirth, as they called it, I guess, placenta. Mm. And my dad was just left there with, I don't know, I guess a toddler, a brand new baby, a wife, a mattress that should be for the bin, and a huge kind of
slab of meat,
stuff with liver, or it's a funny looking thing.
Yeah.
And he just, no one told him what to do with it. So he actually carved it up into little bits and put it on the fire.
Burnt it
like in little
bits.
Like a
fucking serial killer, basically. He chopped it up.
Well, there's no bones, so yeah, no one knows. That's
a bust.
Put it down the incinerator. Yeah. What's your dad up to now?
Yeah, so that was the story.
Wow. Know.
Really?
Yeah, he just didn't. No one said, tiny little backyard.
Wow.
Outside. Little kind of house near Glasgow, and there was no backyard. There wasn't a backyard ready to carry a, you know.
If you've got it on the fire, though, you may as well eat it. I'm thinking.
I wonder if he was tempted.
I bet he had a cheeky piece.
You know, Scots, though,
they don't waste a thing.
Yeah,
haggis. It's a new style of haggis.
Well, maybe that is
stuff. Haggis. Stuff the.
Might have come across something there.
Yeah, there you go. That could be a new thing.
Maybe it's a very old thing that they just don't talk about.
Scottish tenement haggis. Stuff that, will you, darling?
It was actually our second midwife who did the encapsulation. So she took it away and did it for us, which was great.
I wonder if that's the woman that did ours.
Sam.
So it's an extra, they have a little machine that freeze dries.
Dehydrates it, basically. And she dried out the umbilical cord, and she said usually she makes it into a heart, but his was really long, so she wrote love. It's dried umbilical cord.
Yeah, we got a blood splat as well. Did you get a blood splat painting? It's like a Rorschach test. That's so weird. We kind of went, that was a step too far for us. We went, yeah, okay. Because it was like they've gotten the placenta, and they've kind of thrown it at a piece of paper.
Oh my God, it makes a kind of blood splat
sort of thing. So we got the little cord thing dried out. We got the capsules and all that. We went, oh, great, that's excellent. Then we got this kind of Dexter.
What do you see?
Print and like, yeah, okay, right. I'll just put that aside.
Well, how far does
the woo-woo go, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Sam actually, she was great. Like, so I cut the cord, basically got back in the bed, I cut the cord, I tied it off and I cut it. Mm. And then Sam was like, do you want me to show you the placenta? And we were like, yeah. So she came back and laid it out on a bit of material for us and walked us through it, like lifted it up and showed us the sac and showed us all the blood vessels and how it all worked.
Yeah, it's fascinating. It's an incredible machine. Really that interesting. That is one amazing piece
it's
of
the life throwaway organ that your body produces. It's incredible.
It is incredible, yeah. We made the grandparents take it home in a fucking yogurt container. Take this, will you? What are we going to do with it? I don't know. Put it in the fridge or something.
You know those people that leave it attached until, like, they don't cut the cord.
Yeah,
they carry it around.
Ball and chain.
Oh, can you imagine the smell?
Hang on a minute.
I don't know.
Attached, they leave it attached to the baby.
100%. The whole thing is attached until it naturally drops off. Yeah. Rather than cutting it at all because they think there's still stuff coming. But I don't know. I'm kind of a believer of like.
Those people may have other psychiatric diagnosable issues. Yeah. As well.
It's a bit Leatherface, isn't it? What do you do with this afterwards?
Not that we're judging anyone who might want to do that.
I'm blown away by all this placenta stuff.
Oh, yeah.
I knew that people were getting the cord and using it for in case they needed spare parts or something in the future. Or cloning.
Do you know,
if
you put them in a warm bath with certain salts and stuff, they'll actually turn into another child. A very strange and awkward child.
You're mixing that experience at Hepburn Springs with the warm bath and salt.
And, of course, you have to keep that child in the basement until it's 28 and then release it on the world. And film it from a distance. Sorry, I could go on. That's a good script for a horror movie though, don't you think? They threw out the baby and kept the afterbirth, thinking that was the better looking one. And it turns into this creep. Sorry. Anyway.
Yeah. Well, it's on record now.
It's on record. Well, I'll make
no one else jumps in.
You know who could do that?
Maybe you could write it.
David Cronenberg would make it great because he was big on all that sort of. You know Cronenberg movies like Videodrome and things like that. Naked Lunch, all very visceral and anal and.
I would think more. Who did the original The Thing? Who did that?
That was Carpenter. I think.
Yeah, that's pretty close.
Yeah, it's a bit sort of blobby.
I'd say he would have. Yeah, he would have made that film pretty much after helping with a birth. That was.
There's a lot of people that have had very strange. Like David Lynch's first movie, Eraserhead, was a response to his daughter being born, and the woman gives birth to this sort of slug. And they keep it in this. Have you seen Eraserhead?
Years ago, and
it's
I didn't enjoy it.
I think it was all his kind of fears about being a father and being a father quite young.
Yeah,
but you know, you kind of. I hope you made the movie long after the birth. Like you imagine if you're going through pregnancy and your husband, rather than helping out, goes away and makes this macabre film. Hey, darling, I made this film for you. I thought
this is the problem.
Might help you deal with pregnancy.
Art books, fine. Art poems, fine. But art films, you can accidentally see them because your mates sit around and go, "I've got this film," and you get smashed. And that's the danger. Yeah, I wish I hadn't seen Eraserhead. It frightened me a bit.
Yeah, it's kind of horrifying. Anyway, that's enough of the dark side of childbirth. But that sounds amazing. I mean, what an amazing experience.
To be honest, though, there's a huge dark side to childbirth. Like most of it is dark side. Like it's all fear. Like,
oh, right, yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like when I was saying, the midwife calls our child a boring child, it was a boring birth, because it doesn't have these scary stories attached to it. I think this is why everybody goes to hospital because they're
frightened. They're
frightened.
Well, and then there's another. Tell me then about where you're at in terms of you probably had a bit of this even during the pregnancy, but that those sudden. I've had a few of these. It's like suddenly the plane drops a few hundred feet, and you go, "Oh fuck!"
Freak
and it's not. It's not exactly bad, but it's just like the weight of responsibility. Like this is the. We were talking with Anthony last week about the unavoidable vulnerability suddenly. Like you to love something like that is to be incredibly vulnerable to suffering in future possibly and all that stuff. Have you had moments of, fuck, what are we,
Yeah. I don't know that I had any that where I really freaked out and went, this is a bad idea.
No.
But I had a moment of, and I'm sure everybody wouldn't. I know that Asha had it as well, is that moment of, life, it will never be the same again.
Yeah.
It's everything I had before is gone. And, you start going, who am I now? What am I anybody anymore? Or is it just all about this? Is it going to be just about this child,
Yeah.
But it was fleeting.
No, I agree. They usually are. That altitude drop, usually the resilience comes when you have that. It's necessary to kind of have that to take it seriously. But then you can go, but that's great.
Yeah.
Because this is how I grow. This is how we become important.
Yeah. On the flip side, on the really positive side of things, it was like I didn't feel like until he appeared that I had a strong connection. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, and I think we spoke about that when we first talked is like, it's in Asha's going through everything.
Yeah.
All the hormones, all the symptoms of everything. It's just she's growing. It's in her, I got to feel it and go.
Every nightmare, every wriggle.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I got to feel it and go, there's something going on in there and it feels a bit weird.
Yeah.
But when he turned up, it was amazing. Like
those eyes.
Yeah. When I saw his eyes in the pool. No, It really is like all the stories people tell you and all of this stuff. And, my mates, it's the best thing that ever happened to me. And then I see their kids, they've got food all over their face and they stink and there's a mess in the house, And I'm like, best thing ever. But now I've had it and I'm like, okay, I get it. We spent the first 5 days just staring at him, you know, and it's just love. It's just this crazy connection to this person I've never met before, really didn't know that he existed other than him knocking on the wall, you know, and then there he is. I didn't think he looks exactly like me or anything, but there was just this amazing connection.
And there's also, I mean, if you want to look at in a biological sense, it's hard to dispute that that's the meaning of life.
Mm.
I mean, everything about evolution suggests that the only real thing it's trying to do is get you to pass on your genetics to the next. And it's quite brutal nature in how it does that. I mean, that's pretty clear.
Yeah.
From a biological perspective. And so something must in you be going, this is the greatest success I can have. Nature is grabbing you and embracing you and saying, well done.
Yeah.
This is it. This was the fucking point. Some of you don't do this. And I'm not begrudging people that don't have kids, because we need a lot of people that don't have kids.
Yeah, there's plenty of kids on the planet.
I really don't want to be that guy. And it's not, there's a lot of meaning to be had from life that's got nothing to do with children or whatever. But just on that purely biological. And it would make sense that then you would feel this that way, it's all downhill.
And it's only philosophy. It's only philosophy that can sort of cancel that out. Overthinking.
Yeah.
You know what I mean, I believe that philosophy is the appendix of our psyche. We've evolved. It's an accident. It's a human.
We don't
flaw.
Need it anymore. I think that about religion. More
the
than
instincts
philosophy.
And that love, that staring at a brand new baby, and just going, "This is so good," or just holding the hands of a girl on a train when you're 16, just that bliss, you know? It's those things that then they get, you know, we talk about it, we talk about how good it is right now. But I just think that the philosophy of going, of questioning what's making you do that, like, oh, is that just chemicals or, you know, it's just the design of everything.
Well, I can remember it doesn't feel that long ago when Asher and I, you know, we've been together for, like going on 12 years or something now.
Oh, wow.
And only been married for the last, almost three now.
Well, you want to be sure, don't you?
Well, Ash is younger than me. There's also, like, it was all to do with timing and what.
Get her through HSC first.
Yeah. But I can remember, it doesn't seem that long ago when we had conversations about kids and it wasn't something that we were like, it's definitely going to happen. It was like, kind of much of a much, just not really fussed either way, you know. Mm. And now, there's already been talk of another.
Wow, that is a successful birth. That is a, as the midwife would say, boring birth, but I would say the dream birth.
Yeah.
We did have one. Definitely, if you say that right away.
We did have a bit of a crappy scare. He was jaundice. He got jaundice on day two. Day one, jaundice is really bad. Day two, midwife came back to check on him and he looked a bit orange.
Yep.
And she was like,
oh, yeah.
I think it's a good idea to go in.
Yeah.
Or not, I think it's a good idea. She said, I don't want you to have to go to hospital, but I want you to go to hospital, because she knew that we obviously wanted to do everything at home. And, so we ended up going to the women's hospital. It's amazing. It's the best. Yeah. And so we went there and he got wrapped in like a UV blanket. Like, we could have taken him to a rave. It was awesome. Had him 24 hours in that, and then, he came good. So, but that was
to do with liver or kidneys or something, isn't
it? It's to do with your liver processing proteins and fats.
Yeah.
Don't quote me on that.
Yeah.
But it's something along those lines. And, the yellow is it showing up in your skin, and then the light, the UV light, does the job that your liver would be doing. And so basically – they either put them in like an incubator and flood them with like, put little tanning glasses on them and flood them with light. Or if it's a lesser case, we were right on the cusp, just over. Even the midwife that we had in hospital was like, I'd love to let you go home, but because you're so close to the line, but we're going to keep you in. So,
So the UV then kind of kills
it breaks,
toxins, breaks down.
It does the job of the liver and breaks down whatever it is.
Isn't that an amazing thing that your body does? And another extraordinary thing it does. There's backup systems to, if something fails.
Yeah, it's crazy. And just think that UV light would do it.
Yeah.
It's bizarre. And then you just pass it.
Yeah.
So,
wow.
Crazy.
I know our boy had a, in utero scans that suggested one of his kidneys might not have developed and rah, rah, rah.
Oh, wow.
Go, it's normal, it's normal. Just, you know, slow. We just do a test and we'll check it afterwards. He's born. And they go through these motions. And, yeah, they did a scan, something. They wouldn't even let us go near. Because, you know, that brand-new baby, they seem to think, like with circumcision and things like that, they seem to think that agonizing pain's okay if they can't swear at you or something. I don't know. But they had to put something into his urinary tract when he was born to do a little scan and make sure he's cool. It was cool in the gang. No ongoing problems there. Yeah. Just like
I had a couple of moments of thinking, what happens if he's born and has an external organ, or you know, all that kind of stuff can happen. And because we had one scan, the only scan we had was at 21 weeks. We didn't do any others. Like just a decision that we made. So we had that first one, and everything looked good, and we're like, okay, we'll just let it. Everything's going to go.
For thousands of years, more people have done. Yeah, I mean, I think when we were born, didn't even have ultrasound, did they? In the 60s and 70s, I don't think my parents got had.
I don't think they
did. They
no,
I don't think so.
I don't think they had them for my sister, but I think they had them for me, which is only a couple of years apart, like mid 70s, I think.
I noticed that the ultrasound came up in the news the other day.
Right,
I can't remember what it was though. I didn't read it.
Good story.
It said breakthrough for doctors diagnosing something. Right. So it was an app and a little device that literally plugs into so your GP doesn't have to book you in and that you might wag for an ultrasound to check something. He just literally just whacks this thing straight onto your prostate and plugs it into his iPhone and has a quick cheeky look. So every doctor can have one.
They've got weird 3D images of them now too.
I think people get quite obsessed with the whole scan thing. They do the 3D thing. You can print it out. They do check. Is it okay? What sex is it?
You can see whether he's a spring, summer or autumn, so you can have his clothes perfectly ready for his complexion when he gets out already.
That 3D one is super fucking creepy.
We
might have got that. It looks gold.
Looks like
it is.
It was like this weird metallic.
It looks like a child in formaldehyde, frankly.
Yes.
Looks like a mummified baby.
And there's weird things in it, weird lumpy shapes and all kinds of odd stuff.
What's that?
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't like it at all. It reminded me of a razor head.
You know, a weird thing too is when we went in to get an ultrasound for Luna because I think I know more than the ultrasound person, of course, because I'm a medical expert. And she's sort of we're seeing the baby in different ways. So he goes, there's a penis. There it is. And she goes, no, the girls actually have a bigger penis when they're in utero than the boys. Now, that's not exactly what she said, but she said that's a bit of a trick because when they're at that stage of development, the genital sort of area, because you all start as female apparently, but it actually can look more like a male in terms, if you were just a lay person looking at it, it can look more like a male than a female, but it's actually, and she was a girl. Did that make sense?
Yeah.
It looks like they've got a great cock basically there, but it's not. It's, there you go. So I thought I was convinced how far in was that? It was a boy.
Like really early?
It was pretty early.
Yeah.
Pretty early. But I declared it. I called it.
Yeah, but you're talking a great cock, but the whole.
I meant great as a big, child not was wonderful.
Not terrific. It was superb. But the whole child's only that big, so this is a tiny little.
It is, but it's clearly sticking out.
So thumb thing.
What a magnificent cock.
He was going off ratio.
Exactly. Relative to the child.
Many times we've heard that sound coming from the ultrasound room. What a magnificent cock he has for a girl.
So you've got a son.
I got a son.
Jesus.
Yeah.
I am the father of a son.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And he's been really good. Like we're still like not even 3 weeks in, but he sleeps really well. He started feeding more often during the night. So it's about every 2 to 3 hours at the moment that Ash is up. Last night was probably one of the most intense ones, but she's good. But we've got a system in place. Well, not a system in place. We've got kind of a thing that we do. Like we take turns at doing the nappy change when he does the feed.
Yeah.
In the mornings, I generally get up about 7, so I take him and leave Asher to sleep. And I found that we've got an ergo baby carrier thing.
Yeah.
If I stick him in that, I can go out the back to my office and work, and he just passes out.
Yeah,
yeah. And so I work.
Does he have a crack at your nipples?
No,
I guess I've got more spongy boobs than you have.
Try for that yet.
But my kids always try to have a crack.
So did mine, and I refer to it as the hairy nipple of disappointment. that's the hairy nipple of disappointment, my child. No milk chill issue from this ghastly organ.
And you don't know whether to just sort of buff them off or to go, well,
see what happens.
If they find out, then they'll
try. You don't want someone to walk in just at the moment they make contact.
They need to learn.
Do you know somebody's invented a thing that a man can wear and feed a baby off it?
Yeah.
That's messed up.
Oh, mate, Robert De Niro was wearing one in a movie.
That's right.
Yeah.
What's that going to do for your kid? I don't think that's a good idea.
No, I don't know.
There's something about
boobs. But then wait till she's an eternal milking machine. I mean, I know there was a period where it gets really quite, well, it might not be, but who knows? Well, just that you're just this machine.
I feel like she's a machine now.
But once they're really like eating lots and they're getting bigger and there's just milk being, we were like, just there's just this sound of the breast pump, either breastfeeding directly or the breast pump going constantly. Yeah. And women get really quite, they're just a cow, basically.
It can be really demoralizing.
I've already,
it's them that say that.
I've got a mind.
Don't you say you're just like a cow, lady. Yeah. Yeah. But they say it. They go, I just feel like I'm just this lump that's designed to feed this child.
I feel bad because there's times when I have him and Asher's doing stuff and then he starts to get grumbly and then, you know, I'm like, I can't stop him from grumbling right now. So, you know, he's doing the hand chewing.
And why have we got these tits if they're not to be used either? Like, it's ludicrous.
Yeah.
Like, we've got them.
What's the point?
Yeah, I mean, it adds insult to injury. Not only have we also got boobs, but we're not willing to use them. Fucking hell. The bloody patriarchy, that's what it is. It's a bloody patriarchy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Men can breastfeed, they just don't.
Deliberately evolved them out.
Yeah. Choose not to.
Would you though, if you could? You know,
I don't think I would.
No. Well, there's always the breast pump. That's all right. You could do that. I think some men do lactate. It can happen. It can be done. Not in the volumes that are necessary.
Well, maybe if you stick with the soy, breast tissue.
Keep the cheap soy milk. Yeah.
This is going to turn into David Cronenberg movies again if we're not careful. So yeah, wow.
What are we going to? Danny, let's think about what we're going to. Let's put out some things that we're going to ask Jeff next time he comes in.
Maybe you can theorize on what's happening.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well, so right now
he's not going to remember any sleeping. Of this, by the way.
Right now we're sleeping.
Yeah.
Where he isn't a very grumbly baby. He doesn't cry and scream a lot. Mainly when we change him, he doesn't like the cold cloths and being wiped.
Yeah.
He feeds regularly. Asher's not having any problems with that. So that's the scenario right now.
Have you been out? Been out and about?
Yeah, we took him to a cafe at 10 days old and then we took him to the markets on the weekend. There's a market we go to in Flemington, a really nice farmer's market. And
it will change, you know, as you know, obviously, and you know, and it changes all the time. And
it'll change constantly.
Yeah, like,
Don't know if it'll be positive or negative change. Yeah, but
then it's
not going to be the same.
Well, if it's all perfect now, I'm just saying.
Somebody had to say it.
I think there's a rule of thumb. If the next year or two, you go, oh, he's sleeping really well and feeding well and everything, then it's just pretty much
this is
be an
parent.
Evil shit because what they're doing they're planning something.
He could just be boring right up until
the way through.
The
end of uni. That's what you want.
But that what you
get excited once you've got your degree, son.
That thing you're talking about, Derek, is what bedraggled parents tell themselves to try and deal with the parents like this who are bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Yeah.
And, you know, they say, yeah, well, you wait till they bloody.
Yeah.
All right, that's the most annoying piece of advice that people are going to give him over and over again?
Well, we already had the pre-birth one where everybody tells you the age, you know. Oh, it's going to be a boy.
Yeah.
Oh, it's going to be a girl.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and now that he's here, now we're getting, parents are saying different things and
savor this because you won't remember it.
Yeah.
They keep telling you that. Oh, do you remember
and,
that?
And it goes
you won't
so
remember,
quickly.
And then you don't remember it. You go, oh, fuck. I would have remembered it if everyone wasn't so busy telling me not to forget.
And it goes so quickly. Then
you might listen
you
back to
it.
This a few times going, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he already looks so different to when he, you know, like the first day.
Yeah.
It's crazy how much he changed. He's filling out. He's, yeah it's all
yeah.
I think it's fast. Like boiling a frog, really. You start, you know. Oh, once she gets over the nausea in the first trimester, everything will be okay. And then from then on until the kid's like 40, it's like, oh, no, it'll be- it's all right once their kids are a bit older. It just goes and goes. And you go, all right, now the birth's done. You're all right. And you go, oh, no, maybe not.
Well, you have to, things are gonna you're going to have to think of something for next time. Because the pregnancy was really good. Asha had a great time through the pregnancy, like really lucky, no major sickness or anything. The birth kind of just happened really well. Like we had that little jaundice thing, but that wasn't really anything to be scared about. And now he just seems like a little angel. So
perfect.
You probably if I come in next time and things have changed, you're going to have a lot of fun with me. But right now, yeah, it's.
But you know, like we often spend a lot of time. But that's the nature of this podcast. But we spend quite a bit of time on here. Talking about the difficulties for us as individuals and just being a dad and all the things that go with it. And I you know, it's easy to forget about all the good stuff and, you know, hopefully we don't neglect that too much. We're just trying to help people to not feel too isolated and alone.
Yep.
But it is an extraordinary thing that can't be transmitted to people without them experiencing it. And I find there's these tiny moments that are quite inexplicable and hard to even describe. There'll just be a moment with one or both of them where it's like all of these sort of things come into alignment and you're there and you're with them and there feels like a smooth sort of continuity of movement. It's very hard to explain. It's very it feels instinctual. It's nature again, I think, patting me on the back going, you know, no matter what else happens, you're protecting this child. You're doing the right thing.
Yeah.
And that's good and that's enough. And you know, it's great to recognize those moments.
Yeah. I think it's very hard to stop yourself from getting worried. And going,
oh, of course.
You know, he's had a little bit of nappy rash stuff and, you know, you see it and you're like, oh, God, he's falling apart and what have we done wrong? Yeah. He got little milk spots and I'm like, oh, he's got baby acne. It's like, oh, God, change your diet.
And then when the second one comes, you just don't give a shit about it. Well, you know what's a real problem. But, like, Luna's just covered in bruises and banging her head on things because we don't kind of – you know, dive over with a cushion to put under her head every time she sort of falls over.
Yeah.
So it's like, and then she's okay.
Yeah, you know? She's fine.
They're just, yeah, managing our own fears and issues.
It's a big thing.
We're so inward looking these days, I think, which is a good thing ultimately, like the kind of the 50s parents who perhaps put themselves too much secondary, like their relationships might have suffered because it was all about the kids. We're kind of the opposite or can be, where we're so in our own heads about it and what it means and what we've, you know, that's a hard one.
It's a challenge.
Yeah. But
I think, like I thought a lot about my situation with work is I feel really lucky.
Right.
Because I'm there all day. You know, and it is distracting, but I've actually found that I think I'm procrastinating less than I used to in getting work done faster because I know that, you know, Asha's going to need a hand with lunch or she might want a break to do some other stuff. So I got baby time, you know.
Now is the time you can do it.
Yeah.
You can't procrastinate because later on.
Yeah. So get the work done.
Got stuff to do.
Get into shape, get my work done. And then, I've got other stuff to do.
Having said that. At the moment, the baby's fairly predictable.
Yeah.
In that they're a blob. They don't wander off and start dismantling the
fucking once it starts rolling around and crawling. Yeah.
And then, then the that's what I've found difficult then is just that, especially when there's two of them, that all the routines go. So then there might be a couple of days where something's going on and for some reason one's just not sleeping. So that throws all this.
Everything out,
all these sorts of things.
You need to tunnel. You need a tunnel into your office and you need to leave the house, this is eventually, not now, right? But eventually you need to say, I'm off to work now, and get in your car, drive around the corner, then get into the tunnel,
yeah,
and get into your office and do your work. That's the only way you can work from home.
I do feel like
I was like, oh, can you just no.
We've had this conversation. I said no, there will need to be strict kind of working hours where I'm going to have to work.
Yeah.
But just being that in that, you know, being close and accessible,
especially at this stage,
makes me think about mums who just do it all on their own. It's must be so bloody hard.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah. I know. I mean, we were saying last week, you're any sort of judgments you may have had of certain parents and whether they were good or not just goes away now, because it's like, it's hard.
Mm.
Yeah. And what about Ash's plans to get back to work and stuff like that? Is that just completely on hold?
Yeah, for now she's not really thinking about work. Like,
but was there a plan like, oh, you can in 6 months? I think I might.
6 months was kind of minimum. She was thinking, oh, I'll take 6 months off. Her job is on hold, which is great at the school, at one of the schools. She just got offered another job, which would have been awesome to have the two schools, but timing's not good, so she can't do that.
Yeah.
But, 6 months, we'll see how we go. She can get students at home, which helps with teaching music.
Right.
So she might ramp that up a bit, you know.
Self-employment is so good for, I think it's for modern parents, even though there are a lot of workarounds and nightmares and you suffer a bit, but shit, it's so good to be able to just go, all right, I'll rearrange everything and I'll go and pick the kids up from school, take them to the park for trick or treating or whatever.
As long as you
do today.
As long as you learn to triage stuff and know when it takes precedence over the work and when it
was like when Chris was on the show, who's a youth worker and done a lot of work on building sites and stuff like that, and there's the one thing that he across the board that he's got from the oldies, like people with grown kids who work on building sites, and he said not one of them ever says, I wish I'd worked harder. Every one of them says, I wish I'd just
spent more time
with the kids, because it's tiny. Now that I've got one at 11, I'm starting to freak out. It feels like I'm in the last week of my 3 week Bali holiday. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, oh fuck, you know, shit. It's not like I've only got a certain amount of time left to model this person.
Yeah.
I've only got a certain time left. Well, I have, but a certain amount of time left to spend with this person, still like me.
Yeah.
Possibly.
And then your journey toward irrelevance will be complete.
Exactly. That's why I have another one. I'll have a midlife crisis.
Yeah, but you can't usually by the time the other one. Well, you could. Yeah, you have to, you know.
It's a bit late
for me. Sell your scooters and buy a Porsche.
Yeah. I've been doing midlife crisis since before midlife. And now I'm well and truly after midlife. So too late for that. I'll just keep them rolling. One every year. So next time you come on.
So I'm back. You're having me back again.
Yeah. You're now.
You're not like bitterly disappointed because I had no bad stories.
No, this is like when you're thinking the poker machine's going to pay out. You know, you keep losing. You go, no, it's got to. So if things go well for you, eventually it's got to turn.
You're going to be like, next week we have that prick Jeff back on.
can't you see us all like vicariously going back to those moments?
And we'll have your son in here going, oh, my dad's so great. Shut up!
It's funny, as we preemptive talks about this kind of session with my wife, and she was saying about how the we've got positive stories, and she's actually leading up to the birth, she listened to a lot of podcasts, this particular one about birth stories, and she said most of them were negative, but then there was a really positive one that was on, and she said it was such a relief after listening to all of these horror stories.
Yeah.
That this woman just came on and went, it was really nice and I had a good time. And she was like, thank gosh.
It's all narrative. And most narratives have to have, trouble. They have to have drama to be of interest. And
Right now, this is a movie would be pretty boring.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But, yeah.
Oh, well, totally. Something has to change.
Yeah.
And then if something doesn't get bad with that, then it has to be something about the what you as a parent are going through internally about sort of identity crisis or something. If the actual logistics of the childhood are working fine, then that's an interesting juxtaposition of stuff, you know. There's got to be a counterpoint thing. So, yeah, it's hard. I tried to write a play about I wanted to write a play about what happens if we get it right with the environment. You know, we solve the climate crisis.
Yep.
And so it's kind of a
No one's even thought of it, have they?
Yeah, well, because I thought you become what you kind of focus on. If we just focus too much on the apocalypse, then it's the self-fulfilling prophecy. We have to be able to imagine a world where it's possible, so that we even try. But the problem from the perspective of writing a piece of theatre for people to watch, getting it right is without drama.
Yeah.
So instead, what I had to do was write a play about how we got to the utopia.
The fight
was in it. Well, and sinister shit happened.
Yeah. I
thought you were going to say we worked out the environmental problems and all died in nuclear war.
No, you know what? The central thing ended up being like the central metaphor is when there was a life raft. So when everyone, the ship sinks, there's one life raft and 200 people. And once the life raft's full, what are you going to do?
Mm.
And he says, you start punching people away from the boat, paddling, and drowning them. And that was the premise of how we were going to get to this future. So I ended up writing a play that was horribly depressing, but opened with this utopia. And then I told the story of how we got to utopia, which meant pushing people away from the life raft. And that play I've never given to anyone. I don't want to. It's like, fucking hell. But it's drama. It's the only way it can have drama. It's the only way, because nothing good, you know. Yeah. Anyway,
well, that's why the news is what it is these days. It's, you know, negative, negative, negative. Yeah. Because people love it. People feed off it.
Yeah, but our show is for dads to not feel alone. What's our catchphrase, Danny?
What is it?
You're not alone.
You're not
alone. You're the one that made it. I gave you a few clues in the question, but
well, that's the
you're not alone. You know? So that is why I'm getting some magic out of this.
And news turning into entertainment is the problem.
Mm.
You know what I mean? As soon as something turns into entertainment, it has to have that narrative negativity and stuff like that.
Mm.
And also, we're wired for negativity because that's how you save your life. You know. But anyway. I've wandered off.
Can't get him back. I tried. I thought I had us back there.
He was trying to shut it down.
I was trying to. We're trying to shut you down.
he's the master of puppets.
Oh, I don't know whether I'm a good master of puppets. I think the strings are tangled. So, anything happening in before we close? Anything happening in 100 miles an hour and all the different things you do?
Work stuff. No, just same.
No as major always. Events.
Like no, the. Because of if you're thinking of having a baby and you're a dad, the government does a great thing now. They do 2 weeks of paid leave.
Which really
helped me with my
self-employed.
With my business. Well, for everyone.
Mm.
You just say, I'm not going to be working for 2 weeks and I'm not getting paid for it. So they give you, it's just a thing they do now.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
which was great. Cool. It allowed me to pay a
what
writer.
What do they decide your wages though?
They just—it's just like a set amount. It's like $720 a week or something.
Right. So that's like a month. Just kidding.
So now there's going to be sort of photos of babies on motorbikes all through.
Yeah, I know. Actually, a friend of ours said you've got to tie it in. It's a whole. It'll your traffic will go through the roof. And I was like, I don't think it will.
You got to use that baby. Get some mileage out of that baby. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
But
you could cover the baby in sponsorship. Stuff,
maybe
decals.
What's his name? How are you
going to... His name's Remy.
Yes.
So his name is Remy Hunter Baldwin. So he was born on, Asha went into labor on the Hunter moon. It was a full moon. It's like an American Indian thing. And we really liked.
Yeah.
Her mum was reading something. It's the Hunter moon. And we were like, that's a cool name. So didn't do it as a first name because it sounded a bit American. And Remy was a name we'd thought of way back. So
there's a few old school job names getting around. Sailor, soldier. Scout, soldier? Hunter.
Yeah, scout.
Yeah. few of these kind of jobs.
So that's who he is.
Engineer.
Door salesman.
That's a great name. That's a great name.
Dental hygienist.
REMI.
Oh, yeah.
We threw around REMY and REMI and which one's supposed to be male and female and all of that mess. But
you've given him quality of life by making it the first instinct spelling.
REMI.
Janitor.
Unless people start thinking why. You won't know too.
Well, I've struggled with that my whole life. Is it G or J? You know, Jeff.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm a G. Yeah. Everybody thinks it's a J. But
at least everyone knows there's a choice.
Yeah.
Are you G or J?
Plumber? Carpenter?
Are they still going on names?
99%. Thanks, Danny. Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Kitchen technician?
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah. There's a thing with Derek, making it about me, whereas I reckon, this is a made-up stat, 99.9% of people called Derek is D-E-R-E-K. But everyone in the world thinks that maybe D-E-R-E-K is only 1%. Everyone tries to put two R's and I's and C-K's all over it. And it's just, I've never met anyone with a spelling other than
And you than were mine. Rolling your eyes at my tangents.
It wasn't a tangent. It was completely related to the spelling of Remy and whether he's going to have a difficult life because you've tried to be clever with an accent or something like
that. Roofing plumber.
I was
solar installer.
I don't know.
Gynecologist.
I like you with
gynecologist. There you go, son. Gynecologist, that will work for you. No, Trust me.
It's a bit like the Boy Named Sue song, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
It's not uncommon. Gynecologist. But it's cool, French. Yeah. Is it French?
What is?
Remy.
Gynecologist.
Yeah, I believe it is.
Yeah. Gynecologist is a lovely French name.
He's lost his mind.
There's a hip hop or rap duo in Melbourne called Remy.
Okay.
Which we found out later. But
that's the thing, you just don't know what's going to happen. We named our daughter Clover, and then I noticed a new dating site, kind of like Tinder, but maybe I don't know. I didn't look into it, but it was called Clover.
Wow.
Right. I went, oh no, what if that's just part of the vernacular when she's 16? This is like Tinder.
Do you know?
Like Clover is a thing. And she's the only person named Clover. Yeah. We're fucked. But I haven't seen it since.
You know, the day the Harvey Weinstein story broke globally.
Yeah.
Someone on that day named their child Harvey.
Yeah.
Like just before the new.
And then went,
Although actually then they could change it probably if
they hadn't lodged it.
Yeah. I wonder if that killed the name the way it killed Adolf. Yeah.
No, I don't think so. I don't think Harvey Weinstein's just one Harvey.
Yeah.
We look after. One of Tom's mates comes around one morning a week and I take him to school, which is cool. And they hang out, play the computer and stuff.
His name's less Goebbels. Rules
his name's Harvey, right? And yeah, I just kind of one day every week I call him something different. I go, Harvey Norman or Harvey White. And then I dropped Harvey White. So he went, oh, no,
don't do that. Yeah. My Luna this morning just totally accidentally she came out to me looking disgruntled. I was in the garden. She came out, she's very grumpy at the moment. She marched across the lawn toward me and her hair was kind of combed. There's a side part and this big fop of hair combed back like that. And she had a piece of Vegemite smeared on her top lip.
So perfect Hitler.
I took a photo. I said, morning, Adolf. she marched across to me. She marched across the square. It was like Nuremberg all again. And it was so weird. She looked just like Adolf.
There is some fun to be had. Taking pictures and taunting your children and hoping they don't sue you when they grow up.
I got a great little video of him this morning sitting on my legs doing a massive fart.
That's just a dream.
Looking all cute and then, that kind of stuff.
How do they get those adult farts out of that? There can't be.
That's a lot of volume that comes out of that.
You're going to feel there's going to be so many photos. So many photos.
Already.
All in the cloud, waiting for someone somewhere. Yeah.
Fame.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much, Jeff.
No worries.
And especially for putting up with our last 10 minutes of random ranting.
No, it's fun.
Well, we had to inject some horror.
This story's been really boring so far.
Yeah, next time, think of something boring, horrible, mate.
Trust me. You will listen back and go, oh, wow, that's what I was thinking good then. But awesome. Look forward to the next chapter.
Soak up the oxytocin.
Love to come back again. It'd be great.
Mm. Cool. Right. Thanks.
Ciao. That Awesome Podcast was recorded at Castaway Studios in Collingwood. Here, we provide affordable, accessible, professional podcasting production facilities to the full range of podcasters, all the way from basic studio hire right through to full season production packages. You can get us on castawaycollingwood@gmail.com or just look up Castaway Studios on all the social medias.